obituary in the paper prematurely, unfortunately, and it was given all about her history. But they all minimized the destruction that this family committed around the world, this Windsor family.
Well, of course, imperialists are imperialists. I suppose the greatest notoriety of her particular position is that she is 101, but that may be due to genes or indeed to good food and medicine, or indeed maybe to the fact that she never had much to worry about in the world. But it is worth bearing in mind for those of you who are royalist watchers like the American listenership that, of course, she was a commoner. She came to the crown rather by accident, in that the first king was deposed or left because he couldn't marry a divorced woman. Things have changed in that regard too. And then, of course, she was there during the 40s when England was involved in that famous war. And the joke here is, of course, and we wish her well, like we wish everybody well, I suppose, at 101, but, you know, she had a blood transfusion this week, and the question is, where did they get the blue blood, or did they pick it off the ranks of the British National Health? Obviously not. And looking indeed at the Irish media last night and the night before, who should have more sense about these things, talking about that she hopes to visit her castle in Scotland later this summer. So the old moneyed property domination thing prevails all the time, and I agree with you about the media handling, but I suppose the media are as much to blame as the royal family themselves on this occasion. There was a very funny, if that's the word, cartoon on the cover of Private Eye a fortnight ago, where Mrs. Parker Bowles and Prince Charles were on the cover, and she says to him, will I ever be queen? And he says, not if you marry me. So it's getting more complicated for them. I would, in the light of what happened to the poor Protestant kid in Belfast in the last week, these to me are the occasions where these people, who are the head, after all, of the official Church of England, turned, and indeed the Church of Ireland indirectly, turn the blind eye all the time. The reality is that Catholics are being shot again on the streets, and that nobody, including Dr. Eames, the head of the Church of Ireland in Armagh, who does, of course, have a seat automatically in the House of Lords, and who admitted on the Endgame series, which I understand still hasn't been broadcast in America, that, you know, he was the guarantor of the Lyrist ceasefires. It beholds them, in my view, to at least point out that this is not really a religious war at all, because that is the first easy propaganda, and is used to great effect around the world and indeed in the United States, that these nasty Catholics and Protestants are fighting each other, and if only they would behave, you know, we, the decent, civilized and polite British security forces, would do something about it. But all the intense concentration of British army in the north at the moment is in the nationalist areas like South Armagh, Mid Ulster and West Belfast. It is not in the areas where civilians are being shot on the streets. They don't take on the loyalists. They don't even police the loyalist areas. And that, to me, is the one big lie, that you, when your President Bush comes out and says he supports the peace process, and then, before he gets on to new ballistic missiles, says he also favours decommissioning, he should be asked, decommissioning for whom? Because, for example, the use of the phrase interface, which are the barriers and the peace walls erected in East Belfast, they're there to protect Catholic minority populations from attack by Protestants across the road. They're not there to prevent Catholics going out shooting Protestants. There is a basic difference in that equation, and it's one which, you know, the entire establishment and the media, as well as the royal family, just simply ignore. And maybe ignoring it is worse than anything else, because at least you can disagree with Dr. Paisley, who says that there wouldn't be any point in discussing this. But this other soft, thoughtless sort of carry-on that's going on about the Queen Mother today, with none of the record, none of the wealth, or indeed none of the legacy of the Windsors as one of the great imperial families in the history of the world. I may mention just one other thing, that the Archbishop of Dublin, Dr. Empey, who was a member of the Irish Army, in fact, but his brother has been appointed President of the Theological College of the Church of Ireland in Ratgar. This is where the young ministers of that church are trained in Dublin, and I have sent him a copy of the Treaty of Limerick. I think the Treaty of Limerick, you should serialise it sometime, John. It lays out in very concrete terms the basic reality of the last 300 or 400 years of Irish history and makes it quite clear that they weren't talking about transubstantiation or indeed receiving communion or any of the other theological problems which are a matter for the theologians. They were talking about land and power and privilege. And that's as it is and that's as it was in the great United Kingdom, even under Tony Blair and the Socialists.
The only good thing I ever heard about the Queen Mum is she drinks a quarter gin a day and never talks to reporters.
Didn't know that. I haven't interviewed her, and she didn't invite me to share her gin. But it is the deafening nonsense when you see people, you see poor British working class people camping 2 days in advance like a pop concert to be present at this thing where she will just wave her hand and carry on. Well, we also forgot to mention, of course, that Prince Charles fell from a horse again last night and was taken unconscious for a while. He was playing polo. Some say he's getting too old for polo. Some say his wife-to-be wants him to continue in the polo business and to prove that his virility hasn't entirely diminished and whatever and so on. But basically, I think it's fair to say that at this stage, the Irish media don't give it the attention they once did, but we do get the overflow from British television, and amazingly, we get the repeats on CBS and NBC and all the other American channels. I don't know what the disease is. It must be an Anglo-Saxon one.
Well, I empathize with Camilla Bowes. At least when he's mounting the horse, he's leaving her alone.
Well, that's one way to look at it, I suppose.
All right, Nolik, we'll have you back on.
I forgot to mention, of course, the Liam Lynch commemoration, which was off last Sunday, but we're coming into the autumn season, and as I said, by the time this one is over, we'll know whether Galway or Roscommon are proceeding to what's been a great GAA season.
All right, thank you. And you're listening to Radio Free Erin, and we're talking about the Queen's 101st birthday, not quite like how NBC's going to cover it. Queen, Mom, Queen, hey. But I'll just read you this, and then we're going to go to a song by Chumbawamba, Farewell to the Crown. And this appeared today. The Leeds-based Yorkshire Evening Post site published 10 stories about the Queen's mum death, including tributes and speculation on how the royal family would react. The stories were not printed on the front page, but they're on the website thisleeds.co.uk. Spokesman said that they were investigating, but they did not know what happened. One article said, she was the widow of a king, the mother of a queen, and the last empress of India. Yet despite the regal and imperial titles, Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, fashioned the modern image of the democratic monarchy and took the crown closer to the people than ever before. Another read, the Prince of Wales was deeply affected by the Queen's mum's death, for they enjoyed a particularly close bond. Spokesman for Buckingham Palace said, this is not something we would like to comment on. Arthur Edwards, royal photographer for The Sun, told Anakova, and not the tennis player, that there must have been a mistake. She looked quite fine to me last night.
holed up in the Bronx, Brooklyn's broken out in fight. There's a traffic jam in Harlem that's backed up to Jackson Heights. There's a scout who trod a child through Sister Wet Idlewild.
Car 54, where are you?
Hold up in the Bronx, Brooklyn's broken out in fight. There's a traffic jam in Harlem that's backed up to Jackson Heights. There's a scout who shot a child through Sister Wet Idlewild.
Car 54, where are you?
And welcome back to Radio Free Erin, and we'll head over to an island in the middle of the East River right now and speak with Karen Lewis, former producer here at WBAI, and she can give us an update on her husband, somebody I believe that goes by the name of Grandpa Al Lewis. Karen, I've been reading stuff on the internet, and I probably should be calling you guys more often, but what's the latest on the medical front with Grandpa Al?
Very good.
Oh.
Very good. He is doing this very, very tough regimen with Dr. Igram. You've probably heard him on WBAI before. Dr. Igram promotes all kinds of health regimens, and Al is doing very well.
What exactly was wrong? Because I was looking at stuff up on the internet about a condition that he has with his eyes, an eye ailment.
Yes, he does. He has ocular myasthenia gravis, which is a nerve disorder that works on his eyes, so his eyes doesn't focus all the time.
And that would be particularly... Hello?
Yeah?
I heard somebody yelling in the background. They used to call people the fools.
The fools, the fools. He's there. How about talking to him?
All right, Al.
Hold on, honey.
Up the Revo.
Hey, Al.
How are you?
Listen, I knew you were making a recovery because I talked to Randy during the week, and he told me that there was a sighting of you at a track near Philadelphia.
I told him I was down in Philadelphia, and naturally, wherever I go, I got to go to the racetrack. So I was at Philadelphia Park. Hey, Big B there?
I'm here, Al.
Hey, Bernie there?
I'm here, Al. How are you, guy?
Good. Eliza there?
Hi, Al. How you doing?
Good. Good. Very good. Very good.
Great to hear
you. I feel great health-wise, just still working on the eyes.
All right. And can you read? Because I know the most important thing one of them is reading. You used to always tell us about all the...
Many times I wish I had been born a dope and had never learned how to read. But that's the only thing is, I'm an omnivorous reader, as I've often said. And it's difficult, very difficult. But I try. I absolutely try. Reading a couple of good books, Vincent Buglosi's book on the Supreme Court decision, masterful indictment of the five justices and the illegality performed, and then a book written by a guy who was a lawyer for J.P. Morgan and a historical book on how they took over Panama, the corporations, and Teddy Roosevelt. But it's difficult. It's difficult. But I'm strong as a horse.
Al, it's great to hear that, and hopefully now people that are listening will get it up on goodlight.net and put out the word that Al is strong, ready to come back.
Oh,
I tell you, Al, I can't tell you how much we miss you up here.
Oh, thank you.
Hearing your voice and taking the...
I can't tell you how much Karen and I, we talk about it. We miss being there for our listeners. I've often said I have the most wonderful, glorious, devoted listeners. And if any of you are listening, I know a lot of you carry over into John's show. I'll be back. I will be back.
All right, Al, thanks. And if there's any update, please feel free to call me and I'll talk to you.
I will. How are the girls?
No, everybody's good. They were on Belfast there on Thursday. I brought Cassie up and she was talking about you. So.
Hey, say hello to everybody at Rockies.
Al, thankfully you were only suspended. You weren't fired.
I hadn't even been suspended. I don't know what. I'm out in space somewhere.
Well, don't worry. There's people outside the station right now playing your tapes, some of the people holding the vigil, and they're keeping your voice alive. So thanks for coming on, Al.
Thank you. Up the Revo.
All right, Al.
Oh, get...
Welcome back to Radio Free Air on WBAI 99.5 FM. We have with us Ed Maloney from the Sunday Tribune, who is, at least for the moment, up in Riverdale. Ed, thanks for being with us. Ed, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now, Ed. So this was the week that the British and Irish governments delivered their much-heralded proposals amounting to an ultimatum for the solution of the peace the crisis about the peace process. What exactly are they proposing?
Well, they're proposing a number of things, mostly concessions to either the SDLP or to the provos in an attempt to get both parties, first of all, to sign up to the new policing arrangements in Northern Ireland, and also, as far as the provos are concerned, to take their decommissioning process a definitive stage forward, sufficient to persuade David Trimble and the Ulster Unionists to re-engage in the Good Friday Agreement, and for Trimble once more to become First Minister, and for the whole deal to be stabilised, I guess, is the way to describe it. And it's a package which is comprised of a number of things. There would be concessions, for example, for people who've been on the run. I think there's about 50 or 60 mostly Republican prisoners or Republican fugitives who would be liable for arrest and being sent to prison if they were caught in the north. Their cases are just going to be quietly dropped. And but the main part of the package has to do with a whole set of policing proposals, which are really, I suppose, designed to fully implement, or as much as you can implement these things, the pattern report on policing. We haven't actually seen the colour of that particular banknote yet, because it hasn't been published. But it's been handed over to the various political parties this weekend, and we are therefore then waiting to see what the response will be. And obviously the most important response now is one from the IRA. The package was judged by most commentators to be more than sufficient for Sinn Féin to accept. And so now it's time, as far as, I guess, political opinion in Ireland is concerned, it's for the time for the IRA to divvy up and to start really putting weapons beyond use in the sense that arms dumps would be flooded with concrete and corroding chemicals, and various ideas like that are being floated around. So it'll happen sometime next week, I guess.
Ed, you had a story last week saying that Sinn Féin was seeking what would amount to their being able to control the police in their own local areas.
Yeah, well, they're not getting that. That's a reference to part of the new policing structure called District Police Partnership Boards. And these are bodies of partly elected and partly selected individuals from each council area in Northern Ireland, the 26 council areas, and then there'll be four for Belfast, North, South, East and West. And they sort of, they're mostly advisory. The local police commander would consult with them and so on and so forth. And they would have a certain limited power to spend money on extra policing services, but very little. What the provosts were looking for was police partnership boards to be given the powers that the RUC chief constable has at the moment. In other words, to hire and fire and to have full operational control. That's, first of all, outside the terms of reference of terms of the Patton report, and I think would be opposed anyway by any government, because of the implications for controlling of policing, and they're not getting that. But they are being allowed to nominate ex-prisoners to sit on these partnership boards. There'll be two or three seats reserved for that type of person. So you will have former loyalists and former Republican prisoners in some instances sitting on these police boards. Needless to say, the unionists are going crazy about this. Other people are being a little bit more sanguine and saying, well, actually, this is really the best way to suck former revolutionaries into the policing system, is to make them part of it. Some unionists can see that, but not all.
Ed, we did make the announcement that you've moved over to this side of the pond. What exactly will your status be? And I have to tell you, from Radio Free Erin's point of view, we're really going to miss your reports coming from Belfast.
Well, I'll still be writing for a certain extent. We're over here for a while. We have a situation that we have to address here, and we'll see how it goes. It'll be a fluid situation. I'll put it that way.
And we're hoping to get your analysis, and as they say, always the phone.
So, Ed, let's come back. As you said, the ball is now squarely in the IRA's court.
Mm.
They're either going to make or break this agreement. And apparently they're going to have to do it by Monday, though they seem to be playing the old clarification game at the moment. What do you think is going to happen here?
Well, you're right. Both sides are, both unionists and Republicans, are delaying their response, and it seems unlikely that, in fact, that either side will let their judgment be known by Monday. And there's a good deal of brinkmanship going on here. Each side is, or each party is waiting for the other to make the first move before they reveal their own hand. And that's a process which, if you ever played poker, can go on for a long time. But there's only a week or so to go before this deadline of August the 12th hits us. And then, if nothing has happened by then, the decision has to be made whether to suspend this assembly or go for a new election. But there's another ploy which would enable the thing to last for another 6 weeks and bring it into September, October. So it may be that the thing will be delayed until then before it's finally resolved. But there's no doubt that there is an enormous amount of pressure on the IRA to make a meaningful response. But having said that, there's a suspicion that what they will do, most probably at the end of the day, will be to try to make an offer which they calculate would be welcomed by Tony Blair and Bertie Ahern in London and in Dublin, but would not be or would not go far enough to satisfy people like David Trimble or his critics within the Unionist Party. But that's only a guess. There's an awful lot of pressure on the provost now to make a meaningful gesture. And I think it's going to have to be reasonably convincing to win over doubters and people who've been critical of the IRA and Sinn Féin's behavior during the peace process so far.
Ed, you were speaking about these policing boards, and you were saying that former prisoners will be on them. Now, any time that I can think of former prisoners, and I look at Sinn Féin as versus the loyalists, Sinn Féin, the rank and file of Sinn Féin, most of them are former prisoners, as is the leadership. So does that mean that there'll be a dual purpose, like Gerry Kelly will be on a couple of boards?
Well, you see, there's two levels of police board. There's, if you like, a Northern Ireland-wide one at the very top, which would really sort of run the policing service. And you're quite right. There is space on that, I think, for 10 representatives from political parties. And since they will be chosen on a proportional basis, Sinn Féin will be represented there, and you're quite right. a significant number of their elected representatives are former IRA prisoners, although significantly, I think that's beginning to drop somewhat as the party moves, as Sinn Féin moves into more respectable territory and tends to shed these type of people. But they're certainly there in the leadership. They can't get rid of Adams and McGuinness and people like Gerry Kelly. They are still there, and obviously they will be entitled to sit at the top level policing board. And that's why it also makes sense in a certain amount of natural justice that other people who were prisoners should also be allowed to sit at the lowest level on the district police partnership boards. But I guess what really matters here is not who sits on these boards, but what powers they have. And as I said before, the idea that you could have a West Belfast police force or a North Belfast police force effectively running itself has been hit very firmly on the head.
And we're hearing a lot of publicity this weekend about the needing the Sinn Féin National Executive to consider that. Is this where the decision will really be taken at that level?
No. This is a totally irrelevant meeting. It'll be a rubber stamp meeting if they get round to that point. The real meeting is that of the Army Council. There are seven people on that, all of them men. Gerry Adams is on the Army Council, Martin McGuinness is on the Army Council, Pat Doherty is on the Army Council, Martin Ferris is on the Army Council, Brian Killen is on the Army Council, Brian Keane is on the Army Council, and the Chief of Staff, Slab Murphy from South Armagh, is on the Army Council. So those seven guys will sit down, if they haven't already done so, and make the decision about what to do in relation to this. They are the people who really count. They are the leadership of the Provisional Republican Movement. Sinn Féin Ard Colia, which is a much larger body, will not make a decision that runs counter to what those seven guys have done or decided to do.
Well, we're going to go to the phones in a minute, Ed. But if you were a betting man, I don't know if you are, where would your money be on what those seven guys are going to decide?
I would say that they would probably respond positively to this document. And say that they accept it and make an offer on decommissioning. Now, it's the nature of that offer that we're not terribly sure about, how far it will go. And to give you an example, there is an idea that the way to put weapons permanently beyond use is to cover the dumps in concrete. Now, there are two ways of doing that. There's caulking the dumps, as it were, sticking some sort of seal, concrete seal, if you can imagine a bottle with a concrete lid or cork at the top. That's one idea. Another idea is that the entire bottle should be flooded and therefore all the contents embedded firmly and presumably forever, more or less, in inside concrete. Now, which one is putting weapons permanently beyond use? I think most people would say the latter is really putting weapons beyond use, but it may be that the IRA will make an offer such as caulking or putting cement caps on their dumps, which falls short of that, but which nevertheless could be seen as, well, they're moving in the right direction and let's give them a little bit more space. And they may aim for that type of offer rather than going for the full hog. It's a gamble here. At the end of the day, the guy who really is going to decide this is not Bertie Ahern in Dublin or Tony Blair in London, but this Canadian general who's in charge of the decommissioning body. It's his job really to make the decision and to make the judgment as to whether the offer fulfills the mandate that he's been given by the two governments to make sure that these weapons are permanently put out of use. And there is a suspicion that the Provost might try to do something short of actually fully flooding their dumps with concrete. Another point that raises itself straight away is, well, how many dumps are going to be put out of action in this way? Is it just going to be the two dumps that so far have been opened up to the international inspectors, Ramaphosa from South Africa and Ahtisaari from Finland, or is there going to be a progressive rolling program which includes more and more dumps? That's going to be an interesting one, because I don't think that the Army Council knows where all its weapons are, because on a need-to-know basis, it makes sense that that local quartermasters would make their own arrangements to hide their own weapons. And, you know, it would be a very significant breach of internal security for the whereabouts of all these dumps to be reported centrally. So it's going to be interesting just to see how they handle that. So these questions are there, and they haven't yet been resolved, but really comes down at the end of the day to General de Chastelain, whether he says, yeah, this is decommissioning, or no, it's not fully decommissioning.
Ed, before we go to the phones, I just want to ask you, now on this policing issue, Ed, after the police, after it has been set up for a few months or something like this, who is going to staff the Civilian Complaint Review Board?
Well, there's a new police ombudsman there who has got her own staff. And they are supposed to be independent from the policing service and have quite considerable powers. And indeed, some of those powers might be beefed up under the package that was announced last week. But we're not sure of the details there. So it would be really civilian civil servants that she hires for her office who would do this type of investigation of inquiring into the police themselves.
It's now a little after 2:30 here in New York City, and we want to start taking your phone calls, commenting on what happened in London. Ed Maloney's on with us from Riverdale up there in the Bronx, and the number here is 212-209-2900. Number again is 212-209-2900. Remember, these are your airwaves. You paid for them, and use them. 212-209-2900. WBAI, these are your airwaves. Use them.
Yes. Good morning, men. Let me ask you, I didn't know he had a soft Northern Irish accent.
It was
amazing.
No, it was reported in the paper that the guy that bought the car off a used car dealer had a soft Northern accent and is around 5'10 with mousy brown hair. So keep on the lookout if you're up there in Woodlawn.
I'll get Rupert right on the job. He'll get him. Be good, man.
All right, thank you.
Boss Nebron.
212-209-2900. These are your airwaves. Use them. You're on the air. BAI, you're on the air. Go ahead. Hello. All right. The number here is 212-209-2900. And the phone lines seem to be going down very strangely, or maybe not so strangely. 212-209-2900. You're on the air. And people are calling up and hanging up.
Still waiting for that soft Northern accent.
Yes.
Here's me.
Ed, while we're trying to get some people online, I was reading in one of the newspapers about one of the concessions they say they're going to make on plastic bullets, that they will not ban plastic bullets, but they will not train the new recruits coming in the use of plastic bullets, thereby just having the predominantly Protestant police force know how to use plastic bullets. And this overwhelming 30 to 40% Catholics that are coming on will not be trained with the use of plastic bullets. Did you read that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, it's obviously one of these ideas that fall short of meeting the full demand that the Provosts were making, which was for banning plastic bullets outright. But it nevertheless indicates a sort of slow, gradual phasing out of plastic bullets. But the question is, what will they be replaced by? I mean, one of the weapons that was issued very recently to the police force in England, where they've had a number of race riots, I suppose you would call them, in some English cities this summer. They're issuing these stun guns to the police. And the stun guns, to be quite honest, looking at them in action, seem to be much, much worse than the plastic bullets. They seem to injure the people on the receiving end in a much more comprehensive fashion than a plastic bullet. So let's wait and see what these plastic bullets are eventually, as they will be, I think, replaced by something. But what this riot control weapon will be, you know, will be interesting to see.
We're going to try it again. 212-209-2900. The whole board is lit up, but now it's just trying to get you on the air. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I happen to be a typical Irish-American, or part Irish-American, and I'm very sympathetic towards the Republican cause. But I'm a little, I guess this is general question, it's the first time I've listened to your program, but by my logic that the Irish are as indigenous as you're going to get of the island of Ireland, Should we, as white Americans, give back the land to Native Americans, Indians?
Give Ireland back to Native Americans?
No. I don't want to give Ireland back to Native Americans. The logic of the Republican movement is we were here, the British came 300 years ago or so. We want our island back. I'm totally in agreement with that. If you follow that logic, shouldn't white Americans give back vast tracts of land which American Indians are now claiming that were taken from them?
I definitely think they should, because what this country needs is more casinos and more gambling joints and the rest of it.
You know, I mean, that's a facetious, stupid response. Why don't you, you know, I ask it in complete sincerity. Why don't you?
Can you in complete sincerity? If this government wanted to do something, it would go out to the Dakotas and Montana and clean up the mess they've made of one of the proudest of all Indian nations, the Sioux. These people are living in subservience.
You know,
go out there and clean them up instead of giving them lip service about Mount Rushmore and the rest of it and building monuments to Indians. Come out and help these people. Go down to the Southwest and help these Native American, the Apaches and the rest of them who are suffering. Don't be talking about giving tracts of land back to tribes that probably don't exist anymore. Go out and help the people who are really suffering, the Dakotas, the Lakota, out there in the middle of this country.
I've actually been to the Pine Ridge Reservation with Crow Dog, one of the leaders of the American Indian Movement, so I know probably a lot more about it than you do from the way you're talking, and you still won't deal with my question. You give these sort of sarcastic...
Hey, listen, why don't you deal with the... Wait, why don't you deal with it? What's your solution?
Logic. I mean, if you say that Ireland belongs as a republic for one island, which I agree with.
Right, but give me your solution. Go ahead.
Have a solution.
As a fellow white person, what is your solution living here in America?
I don't have one. I mean,
neither do we.
Well, okay. Well, I mean, your logic is that the island belongs to...
Following the same logic, I'm going to go over to France, we'll find some Neanderthals, and give the country back to them, since they lived there before anybody did.
If you take that logic, then your movement, the Republican movement, you have to go back to the lawyers and say, look, we've been here for 100 years.
How much do you know about the Republican movement? The Republican movement does not stress this, and anybody, if you read, the only thing that's been written by the Republican movement covering this in the last 30 years is a thing called Irinua, which was put together by Rory O'Brady and the rest of them, which talks about a country, a federal republic made up of all Irish people.
We
want to move on, because we do have a full switchboard here, and the number here is 212-209-2900. WBAI, you're on the air. Go ahead. BAI, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I am black and Native American. I was greatly offended by your response to that gentleman. He's correct. And to sit there and say, give it back to them so they'll buy more casinos flippantly, was very racist on your part.
It wasn't meant to be racist.
It was nasty.
It wasn't nasty. The thing that I'm talking about is the real problem in this country with the Native Americans is the ones that are suffering in America. To me, the Lakotas and the tribes like this, I've been out there. I've seen them. And I don't believe what these people, these once proud people, are living under.
Yeah, but part of it is because their land was stripped from them. So, I mean, you didn't really answer his question. I'm not saying that that's not true. I'm just saying that came off really kind of flip to say, oh, well, what, so they have more casinos? You know, be careful with that.
Well, could I interject here? There is no one in Ireland on the nationalist side, whether they be physical force Republicans or nationalists, who are talking about taking land away from people who took it themselves in the first place. No one is saying in Ireland that the Protestants of Northern Ireland should be expelled from their land confiscated, and then put on a boat and sent back to whence they came.
I understand that too,
what is happening at all, and therefore the parallel is wrong to say that the equivalent here would be to give all the land back to the American Indians. I think the political struggle in Ireland is about political control. It's about
civil rights.
It's about the fact that that for many hundreds of years you did have Britain running a country which Irish people said was not theirs. And even to this day, you still have Anglo-Irish landlords and aristocrats of one sort or another who still occupy the lands which theoretically their ancestors stole from the native Irish hundreds of years ago. We never got to the point where, except in a few instances, but as a policy, you never got to the point where you know this land was actually taken back and people forced to take the boat back to England. So it's.
No, I think in both cases
the question is coming
really
from the
feasible.
Wrong end. You know,
that's not really feasible that we give all the land back to the Native Americans, or that we, you know, can ever really give reparations to African Americans that we deserve. However, what I'm saying is that, you know, when the guy asked that, I just was a little stunned when the guy said that thing, you know, like that about casinos and that. No, I mean, I think it would have been better to answer his question a little bit more intelligently than that.
You're listening to Radio Free Erin, and we do have a full switchboard here. WBAI, these are your airwaves. Use them.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Come on.
Hi. I have a question. I'm coming in with the morning dew folks at 3 o'clock, and we're catering it. I'm just wondering if you guys have an ice machine or ice available at the station?
No, we don't.
You don't, huh?
No.
Anybody around the neighborhood maybe I could buy it from?
I don't know. You're going to have to try some sort of store when you're coming in to bring in a couple of bags. But there's going to be a party up here, is there?
No. I'm just bringing some food up. There's a band playing, and we just want to feed them.
Okay.
So we're just going to bring some food up for the band.
Let them starve.
Nah.
Yeah, starving
nice.
Artists. That's the only way they perform.
Well, I'm Italian, so we can't starve, you know?
All right. The number
thanks
here
anyway.
Is 202-209-2900. No, there's no ice machine here. WBAI, these are your airwaves. Use them.
Oh, good. Thank you. I wanted to thank you for having Grandpa Al on. It was very good to hear him. At least we get some of the fired in the band occasionally, huh? I was wondering if, apropos of that, if you could tell me who had paid for Robert Knight's trip to Texas. Clayton Riley was very agitated about that as he went off the air.
I couldn't tell you, but I heard Robert speaking at the pier last week, and he said, unlike Lee Harvey Oswald, when he was in Texas, he acted alone.
Uh-huh.
So Robert Knight acted alone, and he went down, and he covered a story about Tula, Texas.
Oh.
And whether he was paid or not paid, and I don't know. He was covering a story that should have been broadcast here on WBAI. Does it really matter if he was or wasn't paid?
Well, I heard him say he wasn't paid, but Clayton Riley would have us believe that he was.
Yeah.
I don't know why he would
listen,
want us to believe that.
I couldn't tell you, but a lot of stuff going on. And I could just tell you, Robert was covering a very important story.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to go on to the next
thank
phone
you.
Call. 212-209-2900, WBAI, you're on the air here. These are your station. This is your airwaves. Go ahead.
Hey, John, this is Patrick. I'm out here in front of the building demonstrating. I'd like to say hello there to Bernie and Brian and Eliza and Sandy. I just want to commend you guys for the work you're doing for opening up the airwaves to the listeners and allowing them to speak their voices and get their opinions in about what's going on there at the radio station. Also, I'd like to give out a telephone number here for anybody who wants to get involved with the movement to save BAI and come down here and demonstrate in front of the building. We're having a 24-hour vigil here 7 days a week. Anybody who wants to get involved with us, they can call us at 1-800-825-0055 or go to the website, which is www.wbaiaction.org. That's www.wbaiaction.org. Also, John, I would just like to kind of give a shout out to the people of Palestine who are right now going through the kind of struggle that the Irish people are well used to over the centuries, and I think we should join with them in solidarity and give a shout out to the people of Palestine and support them in their struggles right now. I think that the previous caller who mentioned that we need to be more sensitive to issues like the Native American people and their struggle. We as a people, Irish people, have tended sometimes to isolate our problem from everyone else's problem and act in isolation as if there's nothing else going on in the world. And, I personally am full-blooded Irish Republican nationalist, but I also feel like we need to globalize our movement and come into some kind of community with the people who are struggling all around the world. And Don, I just want to say good luck, and I'll call in again soon, and hopefully not more people will call our number and come down to the
bring
street.
Bring back Grandpa! Bring back Grandpa! Bring Grandpa!
Patrick, listen, a vigil is being held outside of here at WBAI, and I have to tell you, when I came up and was on Bob Fast's show, it's very inspirational to see 20 listeners out there at midnight supporting some of the things that some of the producers are doing here at WBAI, and it was inspirational today coming by and seeing them all outside with their signs, so... let's keep it going. 212-209-2900. BAI, you're on the air.
Hi. First off, like, I'm glad you're on. The statement that was made earlier by Brian, with regard to, native persons indigenous to this, region, to this, hello?
Yeah.
It was just so quiet. It did seem. I mean, I know you're probably it was just the delivery. It sounded like you're just being flippant. But it did seem a bit insensitive to me as well.
Well, I'm really sorry if it was insensitive.
Mm.
But this is what it seems. Is there something wrong with you? I'm really sorry if it was insensitive.
Mm.
But this seems to be what passes for Indian rights with a lot of the governments in these states and in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, allow them, like upstate New York, to sell cigarettes tax-free,
mm-hmm.
and things like this. This is what American politicians will throw at you,
mm-hmm.
what they're doing for Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Cigarettes and every other thing that all tax-free. And now these things with gambling casinos and all this as... So exemplified by what's happening up in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. But they're like pennies that are being thrown.
And pennies. Listen, if they want to throw pennies, let's get out where the pennies will do something out to Dakota, to the Sioux Nation or down to the Southwest.
But I did appreciate. Hello.
Yes.
I'll be very quick. I did appreciate your inquiring what a solution would be. Unfortunately, there wasn't one provided.
No, I have to tell you, if we knew it or the caller knew it,
right.
Hopefully it would be implemented, but no one has the solution. Well, I would say the Native Americans, if they do call in, they might have the solution for their own problems.
I'll tell you, there may be another solution coming up now with George Bush going into Alaska. The Inuit better watch out because they're going to be drilling right where they live.
212-209-2900, WBAI, you're on the air. Yeah, you'll have to turn down the radio there.
Yes. A couple of thoughts go through my mind. I think I'm...
Turn down the radio because we're getting a lot of feedback here at the station.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm also on the speakerphone. All right.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay.
No, sorry. In my naivete, I think that if the British were to get out of Northern Ireland... That the Protestants and the Catholics and everybody could sit down together and solve their own problems. Not right away, but I think a real fly in the ointment is the Brits. And if they got out of Northern Ireland, I think that would make a tremendous difference. I don't know how you feel about that.
You want to respond to that? Ed, are you still with us?
Hello.
No, I'm trying to... Ed Maloney?
Yes, hello.
Did you want to respond to that comment?
I'm sorry, I can barely hear what's going on there.
The listener just said that if the British declared that they were going to relinquish sovereignty, that at that point the Unionist Republicans might sit down around a table and come up with a real solution.
Well, that's the $64,000 question. What actually would happen in those circumstances? I mean, this has been sort of like a favored view of Republicans down the ages that at this point, if the British did make an announcement like that and gave a date by which they would withdraw from from Northern Ireland, then this would sort of bring the Unionists to their senses. They would realize that the British had let them down, realize that their future lay as Irishmen, and sit down and talk to everyone else about the political arrangements for the future. The other contrary view is that, in fact, you would get that certainly at least a large section of the Unionist population would resort to arms and would resist any attempt to establish a united Ireland or an Irish Republic, and that you would end up with something like a small or quite a significant civil war in at least part of Northern Ireland, and the result might be a sort of truncated state, an entirely Protestant state in maybe one and a half or two counties of what now exists as Northern Ireland. It's one of these questions which, you know, you can only resolve by actually seeing, you know, sticking your finger in and tasting it, as it were, and that isn't going to happen by the looks of things. But I think what is significant, though, is that the provisionals under Adams and McGuinness have actually now opted for that latter interpretation. Effectively, that's the effect of what they have done. They have now accepted that that you're not going to get a situation where the British will make this type of withdrawal statement, but secondly, that the best way to, from their point of view, of getting United Ireland is through persuading Unionists of the merits of Irish unity, and that's a very long, drawn-out, slow process with no guarantee of success. So that's the only way I can answer that question, really.
Well, I think that's a very good answer. I think it's a... I'm not totally satisfied, but I think the real problem here is the British, and let's face it, the reason the British are holding on to Northern Ireland is not simply a matter of pride, the United Kingdom of Northern Ireland, England, Scotland, Wales, and so forth, but the very simple fact is that the British profit rather handsomely from having businesses and industry, especially industry, in Northern Ireland.
I don't subscribe to that, because I think that the facts and figures are there, and they show quite clearly that the subvention, which is the difference between what is raised locally in taxes and what is spent by the central exchequer, the subvention is always like 4 or 5 billion sterling, which is, you know, multiply that by 1.5 to get a dollar value.
Mm.
If you're asking me, or if you're making the point that the British have an interest in Ireland, I would say yes, they do. They have an interest in a stable Ireland, north and south. And if anything, their interests are now more in the south than in the north, for a whole variety of reasons. And I, you know, one of the ways in which this acts itself out is that as the dominant power in that small sphere of influence in Europe, Britain acts as a guarantor for the interests of European and U.S. investors primarily, and it's therefore in their interest to ensure that the place is as stable as possible. And that is why I think you see the British now taking a line which, you know, 20 years ago would be regarded as much more nationalist, Irish, much more sympathetic to Irish nationalism than would have been feasible or even thinkable 20 years or so ago. But that's not to say that, you know, that they are mad raging Republicans. I think they realize that with this provisional leadership, they have here a unique, never-to-be-repeated opportunity to actually establish some sort of long-term stability in both parts of Ireland. And what I mean by that is that a stable Northern Ireland usually will guarantee a stable Southern Ireland. You know, and when the troubles were at their worst in the north, there was always the danger of it spilling over into the south in a very meaningful and very significant fashion. And I think, you know, the British interest now really is the same as the Irish government's interest, which is to neutralize the Northern Ireland troubles. And I think beyond their wildest dreams, along has come this Provo leadership and presented them with this opportunity, and they've grasped it with both hands, which is why I think you sometimes see both governments being accused of pandering far too much to the Provos or indulging them far too much, and I think it's really because half the time they can't believe their luck and they don't want to lose this thing, and so they are prepared to go the extra mile for them. But in terms of like the British getting out and all the rest of that, that's no longer an issue. I mean, that doesn't, you know, the real significance of the peace process here is that it has rendered that a question which is not even asked anymore, never mind demanding an answer.
Ed, thank you very much. We've come to the end of our time. It's really a pleasure to have you on, and we look forward to having you on again in the very near future.
Okay.
And you're listening to Radio Free Aaron, and we always end a little bit early because we play the shout-out tape that T-Dove leaves here every Saturday to us, and it's sort of the transition between Radio Free Aaron and Gut Bucket Matinee, who will be coming in very shortly. He's not coming in today.
Actually, today we're going to be having a Jerry Garcia special that's going from 3 o'clock today till I think at least midnight. So.
That's for all you deadheads out there. And now next week I will have on Odetta. I had the privilege of meeting her last Sunday at the pier for Bernard White, and she sang the Foggy Dew there. So we'll be playing the Foggy Dew once I get the album from Rashida. And Odetta will be coming on talking about how she learned the Irish songs and her friendship with Paul Robeson. So it'll be a very interesting show next week. And we want everyone to tune in and listen to Odetta singing some Irish Republican songs.
For the prisoner shout-out line. By now, I hope most of you are familiar with how the shout-out line works, so I'm going to go straight to the messages. If you have any questions, you can call 212-209-2958, and I'll repeat that at the end of the shout-outs.
Peace and greetings. This message goes out to Brother Reverend Sharpton in the Metropolitan Correctional Facility in Brooklyn. This is Bonnie from the Bronx. Reverend Sharpton, I am in pursuit of sending you a letter. It came back to me because I didn't have your ID number. Unfortunately, you don't need a prison ID number. I want to tell you that I know you're one of the most courageous people for standing up for this system and fighting against the bombing in Vieques and fighting against all civil rights. Okay? All of us should look up to Reverend Sharpton. And if anyone is to be voted in as the next mayor, he doesn't need to have votes. He should be going right into that position. Reverend Sharpton, I want to say to you, may the struggle continue, and I hope you look forward to receiving my letter, and don't give up the fight, because we need to all stick by Reverend Sharpton, and all of us need to follow through with being a leader as Reverend Sharpton has. May the Lord bless you and your family, your two daughters and your wife. Thank you.
Hello, I'm just calling for Winston in Greenhaven. I want to say hi. Take care. Stay strong. We love you. Bye.
Hi, Ms. Offer. I hope that you got my letter, and I want you to take heed to the things that I discussed. I'm not quite finished getting all the information that you asked for, but when I do, I'll send it up there. You cool head. Bye-bye.
This is Alexandra. I want to give a shout-out to our man, Robert, in Stormville, from Alexandra and Brian. And your dad's telephone number has been disconnected, and I want to give you our number. I need to talk to you about your case. It's 203-838-1484, 203-838-1484. is our number, and we need your dad's phone number or a number we can reach you at if it's possible. And stay strong. Got your letter. I'm responding to it now. Been talking with the courts, and I want to talk to you. Take care. Bye-bye.